F aboard. A communications shakeup is said to be afoot, as former North Carolina Congressman Mark Meadows is now running operations at the White House as Mr. Trump's fourth chief of staff in about 3 years. For USA Radio News, I'm Chris Barnes.
Major League Baseball is pumping the brakes on rumors surrounding the start of the season. The league released a statement today saying they haven't asked any government officials to approve a plan that addresses the season getting up and running. The statement comes after unnamed sources said games would be played in Arizona with no fans. And you're listening to USA Radio News.
At the American Veterinary Medical Association annual convention in Washington, D.C., I spoke with Dr. John Howe, AVMA president, about One Health.
One Health is really a collaboration between physicians and veterinarians or public health officials. For example, in Minnesota, our state public health veterinarian deals with zoonotic diseases, rabies, for example. Animals are sentinels for humans, and humans are sentinels for some infections in animals.
There's more valuable information at avma.org.
An estimated 175 million Americans will get stimulus checks directly deposited into their checking accounts over the next 2 weeks. Now, there's still a lot of confusion regarding people who do not file a tax return, especially elderly Americans. David Cerner with AARP says there has to be a quick way to get money to people who don't file taxes.
We already know from the serious number of questions we've gotten from people, how do I get this, what do I file, what do I do, that there's a lot of confusion out there. We want these payments to be done automatically.
According to Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin, elderly Americans will not have to file tax returns.
The president authorized me to say that anybody that has Social Security recipients won't need to file a new tax return, and we'll have that. If we don't have your direct deposit information, we'll be putting up a web portal so that you can put that up. It is a very large priority. The president has made clear we want to get this money quickly into your hands.
A possible light at the end of the tunnel regarding the coronavirus. With the details, here's USA Radio Network's Robin Walensky.
Some signs of progress in fighting the coronavirus in terms of flattening the curve. Still, many more people expected to pass away in the U.S. In New York City, Democratic Governor Andrew Cuomo says the number of hospitalizations down slightly. Michigan and Louisiana still seeing their numbers rise.
For USA Radio News, I'm Tim Berg.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HuntertonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business. You're listening to WHCR-DB, HuntertonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
When it matters most, our award-winning team of emergency physicians and nurses provides sophisticated care 24 hours a day. Superior emergency care at a moment's notice. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care.
You're listening to HuntertonChamberRadio.com, sponsored by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. Our studios are located at the historic Large House, 119 Main Street, Flemington, New Jersey. The content and views of our hosts do not necessarily reflect the views of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. To contact our station, call 908-782-7115 or email onair@hunterdon-chamber.org. Thank you to our sponsors and underwriters. Please remember to support them and buy Hunterdon, buy local. Visit www.hunterdonchamberradio.com for a complete listing of our programs.
Well, good afternoon. This is Chris Phelan coming to you live from the studios of the Hunterdon County Chamber Radio at the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, bringing to you another special edition here on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, brought to you by the Chamber and the County Office of Economic Development. We're going to be talking to Chris Bianco, who is the owner of Team Logic and has a little bit of history here as well with Hunterdon Chamber Radio. So I think, Chris, we've got you on the line, and you're looking good there on the live feed. So how are things down in South Carolina? Do we got you, Chris? Are we working it through? I can see you fine. I just can't hear you. So we'll keep trying to troubleshoot that. Maybe I'll take a minute or two and just talk a little bit about some of the things that are happening up here at the New Jersey home front. Again, I can't stress enough my support to all of our first responders that are keeping us safe as all of us are still going through, you know, this pandemic, how it's impacting us here in New Jersey. It's affecting all of us throughout the region, throughout the entire country, and throughout the world. So I've got to send my hats off and my special thanks to, again, all of our first responders, our law enforcement. Kudos again, I keep mentioning this, the folks up at Hunterdon Healthcare, truly on the front lines, our doctors, our nurses, the technicians, the entire staff that is keeping Hunterdon Medical Center, you know, moving forward, and, you know, the entire team that is, you know, working really 24/7, 7 days a week. And we really want to give them kudos. Want to thank the Office of Emergency Management for Hunterdon County. I really want to thank the folks up at the Department of Board of Health. And I think we have Chris Bianco on the line. This is I think we're good, Chris. You there?
Yes, I am.
I apologize. I think that was operator error on my side, so I truly apologize. Our little false start, but want to welcome Chris Bianco here to this special edition. Chris has got many hats. He's got a great long history, was really on the foundational start of Chamber Radio. We're pushing now over 10 years, Chris. Can you believe it?
Yes, I can, because I was sitting there on the first show and been involved ever since.
So yeah,
it's
first
been
broadcast.
A great experience and a fantastic outlet.
It has been, and you know, it's been kind of challenging and tough, you know, not having our hosts come in on a daily basis and all the energy and life that they bring here to the Chamber studio, you know, with their guests and their shows and their enthusiasm. But I do encourage folks to go visit our website. We've got a special page set up just for the coronavirus shows. We've also got a podcast page that you can go back and listen to previous shows of our great hosts and team that keeps us on board. But in this special edition, Chris, I'm going to put your technology and your IT hat on. You're the owner of Team Logic IT as well, and I wanted to spend a little time talking about technology issues in this day and age. You know, we are all facing these challenges of the COVID-19 impact, and no doubt this workforce shifting over to a remote world in so many regards. We still have folks that are out there in our service industry, as I shared, in our medical industry that are interacting with you know, essential employees interacting with customers and the public. We've got essential retail that's open, but a large portion of our workforce in this country has shifted over, and that has, I'm sure, created tremendous opportunities, at the same time strain, but also folks out there that aren't looking to do good in terms of, you know, possibly breaking in, hacking, and causing harm to businesses and operations as we, you know, really maximize technology in today's, you know, environment.
Right. No doubt, Chris. It's for the last couple of weeks, everybody's been working very hard to get through the chaos for their own personal safety, and then their business, just making sure their business is somehow getting back up and running. Very few people give any understanding, because we take technology for granted, that when you start to take your business processes virtual, that you don't have the same protections anymore than you did when you were somehow in that one building. And unfortunately, there's a large group of people unknown that have realized that and are going to take advantage of it any way they can, because the dark web and the world of hacking is a business, and that's an opportunity for them.
Yeah, I find it amazing, not being an IT person, hence we had issues right at the beginning, me operating the board. I'm still a little rusty on the board, but doing okay, that, you know, we haven't had, knock on wood, thank God, you know, more issues in the world of technology. When you just look at the bandwidth that's out there with, you know, our children home and doing their schooling remotely. Right. You look at colleges throughout the country all shifting over, the workforce shifting over, all the sectors now reliant on an infrastructure. I got to say, thus far, it's been pretty amazing from my minor perspective, you know, in terms of how IT has performed.
Yeah, well, it's great that we've taken advantage of it. It's great that we had it in place to begin with. But unfortunately, you're not going to hear the ugly stories until a little bit later. And we already got some ugly stories, don't get me wrong.
Right.
They're just not taking center stage because if you take Maslow's hierarchy, technology is not going to be as important as our home, our health, and our survival. You know, technology is not nearly going to make that priority. But as soon as the health and the home has been secured, we're now going to eventually learn, and the news cycle is going to focus on the other items that we haven't looked at. And there are things going on right now that we don't know about, but we will learn about because there's people that are taking advantage of it as we speak.
Yeah, and I think sometimes, you know, folks that aren't in the IT sphere or thinking about it, we take a lot of this for granted, you know, at the end of the day. So I'd love to kind of get, you know, some of your thoughts on what are some of the things, you know, that we can start to do as businesses and as employers and employees to start to take stock on, you know, coming up with a little bit of a strategy around, you know, preventing some of this. And a lot of it, I would think, is preventable. I mean, ultimately, there are going to be bad actors, but I would think you'd have some thoughts on that as well.
Yeah, well, just like with the COVID-19 crisis that we're going through, the challenge of any organization is education and awareness. And so now we've been trying to deal with that issue with our health and the medical world. We have the same issue now with the technical world. So let's go through it really quick. So everybody decided at some point that we had to disband our workforce, and we're all working from home. A very large section of us are working from home. We got kids that are doing school at home. We got teachers that are home teaching. We got professors, and we got businesses that are doing that as well. Now, that's fine, but the next thing you got to understand is somehow, some way, those people have to have data and information that is necessary for the function of business. And now that data has left the building, and now it's sitting on somebody's computer in somebody's house, whether it's email or a file or a Zoom meeting, whatever it is, that data is sitting there. So whereas when in my world I have to protect a business when it's inside a box, now that business is in multiple homes. If it's an eight employee company, I got eight locations I got to worry about. If it's a 500 employee company, I got 500 locations I got to worry about. And if we compare what's going on in your house versus what's going on in a business, they are mostly night and day. We go with bare bones and acceptable in the home, but that is not appropriate for what I would do to protect a business. So the first thing you got to do is have some awareness. We got to let the employees know that while they're having this data sitting at home, it's got to be protected, and they got to take care of it, and they got to get rid of it as soon as possible, because there's basically running around with all that data in the wide open spaces, potentially giving it to anybody that wants to get at it. The second thing we got to worry about is that they don't have the awareness of how somebody could break into their house and get that information. So we got to let you know about that as well. So So we can go through that, and that's kind of the four pieces that I've put together in terms of the hierarchy of things we probably should discuss. And quite honestly, I could probably discuss each one of them for about an hour, but all I want to do is give touch points and let people start thinking about it and being more aware about it.
Chris, just real quick, you know, when you say we shouldn't keep that information at home, so what's something, you know, very simple that anyone should be doing on a daily or, you know, throughout the day, you know, when they're, you know, taking company or organizational information onto their home laptop or even on their PDA or tablet?
Well, first thing you got to know is you got to know how important that data is to not only your company, but also the client that you're working on that's associated with your company. So if it's high security stuff such as credit card numbers, user IDs, passwords, that's pretty important stuff, and you don't want that stuff sitting around on your computer. So that should immediately be locked up somewhere, or we should stay on the computers that are part of the organization.
Is that done via, like, putting something on the cloud and then maybe, I don't know, clearing your web browser, or are there other quick tips?
Well, most of the time we unfortunately hand it back and forth through email.
Okay.
And email is a pretty simple option to get into. If I can get on your computer, I can get on your email.
Okay.
So if you and I are, if you need to get onto, so let's say you need to do something in the chamber radio, and you said, Chris, I need to do this. What's the password and the user ID? If I send you both the user ID and the password in the same email, anybody else that gets to see that email now has the access to that information. So the first thing that should happen is they should be separated into two emails. Better than that, that should be an encrypted email, but most people don't use quote-unquote encrypted email. But beyond that, we have to worry about the fact that your computer by itself is not up to date and potentially it can be hacked. And so even before we get into the data, we got to worry about just how somebody could be getting that information that's sitting on your computer. It's one thing to have it on your computer. It's another thing to stop somebody from getting onto your computer to get it. And so that's where we could put all the locks and we can put all the precautions in place. But if somebody allows somebody to get into your computer because you clicked on the wrong type of email, and that's called phishing, P-H-I-S-H-I-N-G, if you do that, then we've lost our defenses. So today, the concept of phishing has been around for a long time, and we've all seen it. It's emails that come to you that you don't recognize, that you go, this is not mine, or it doesn't look like it came from somebody that I recognize. Those are pretty obvious. Some of the things that you notice in those phishing scams, bad grammar, terrible spelling, artificially created logos, it might be generic, like Dear Amazon User or something like that, and you recognize them right off the bat and we delete them. But what I challenge you is that there are more sophisticated ones out there that are going to give you pause or you might not recognize. And so we have to heighten each user out there, their understanding of email and the potential of phishing email, so that they're more cautious about clicking on and accepting any email that could be dangerous. So the four things you basically should recognize is you should always look at who it's coming from. So look at the email address and who it's coming from. The second thing, and that should match who it's going to, that there's something in the body of the email that represents that individual. The second one is it usually has a a time-sensitive message that you have to do something quickly. It has to. It has some type of file attachment or a link. And lastly, it's going to somehow ask you to do something to resolve a problem. And if all four of things are built into that email, you need to have some worry and some suspiciousness about whether it really is true or not.
And then taking the next step on that, you know, once you've deleted the email, should you be doing anything else, you know, with that email in particular?
No, if you simply delete it, you're fine. The issue is if you actually act upon it.
Okay.
It's the acting upon it that's the problem. And every person will tell you who's ever got caught in a phishing scam, it usually happened during a time of frenetic action, where they were very distracted by other things that were going on. They saw the issue, it piled on to the rest of their day, and they said, I just got to take care of this, and they click on it, and they've launched Pandora's box. So whenever you see those four things that I just described,
sure,
that email, perhaps you should just let it sit there for a minute, go back and look at it a little later on and make sure that you are absolutely sure that it's something you need to act upon. Or, better yet, don't act upon the email. Go to the source of who sent it to you and say, hey, I got this email. Can you tell me a little bit more about it? And after you get in touch with them, they say, what email are you talking about? Now you know that there's a disconnect.
What are your thoughts, Chris, for especially our small businesses? You know, we have some that probably still operate on maybe a remote login to get back to their emails. Some are working on maybe servers that are at their particular office versus a platform like, I'll just use it as an example, like Microsoft Office 365 that lets you go remotely. Are there advantages to one of those over the other?
Well, if you're going to, let's take Office 365 for just a second. So Office 365 has been built for the ability to be mobile. So I can go, whenever I go anywhere, I can go onto Office 365 on my phone or on my computer or on somebody else's computer. The danger of going on somebody else's computer is that that computer now has the ability to see how you potentially logged in to Office 365.
Okay.
Now, if you happen to have, there's a program out there called a keylogger. A keylogger is a program that's running silently on your computer if it's been hacked, and I can check, I can see when you type every character that you type in order and where you went. So if I see where you went in a browser and then I see you type a user ID and password, I've got everything.
Wow.
Now, there are ways to defend yourself about that. One of the ways is to never go on a computer that's not yours. Or that, and I'm sorry, you can't even trust your kids, your parents, your neighbor. Every one of them may be their worst defense. So you really can't do that. You never should go on a public Wi-Fi. There really isn't a reason to go on public Wi-Fi anymore. Everybody has the ability to do a hotspot with their phone, so you never should do that. And lastly, now we're starting to enact something called multi-factor authentication. So for anything that's a critical application in your world, you should enact multi-factor authentication. And you've all seen it. Multi-factor authentication usually happens where you sign in, and then it gives you an email somewhere else with a code, or it gives you a text message with a code, and then you have to type that code in. The reason multi-factor authentication is so important is because the bad guys would have to both have your user ID, your password, and your phone, or some other thing to gain access. And now it's getting much more difficult to achieve. So anything that's sensitive, like bank accounts, computer, email accounts, you should all have them on multi-factor authentication. Did I lose you?
You did for a second. You're just back.
Okay. What
you were talking about the multi-factor identification. Is that a certain software that you download, or how does that operate, and what can
many of them now are built into the very critical application. So okay. If you go into your bank account, they usually have a setting for that. If you go into Office 365, they have a setting for that. So you just have to look in each operating system, each program for whatever might be have the multi-factor authentication concept.
Okay. Is that something that you can do as well? Like, I'm just thinking out loud again about emails. Is that something that can be done and implemented to protect emails every time you log in?
Yeah. So every time I go into Office 365, I get it comes on my phone and it says I have to approve that I'm allowing myself to get on Office 365. Therefore, if somebody stole my user ID and password to Office 365 to get to my email,
okay,
and I get an approval request on my phone, and I said, I didn't do that. Now I know that somebody's trying to hack into my to my email.
And you can, that's a setting that you'd have to go in and activate?
Yeah, you'd have to go into Office 365 to set that.
Okay, well, that's great. Great advice in terms of that. Let's talk a little bit about this word. We talked a little about phishing, you know, at the end of the day, and that's phishing with a P. I think a lot of people want to get out and do phishing with an F soon, but you know, the phishing. Let's talk about bombing. You know, at the end of the day, I'm not even sure what that means in the world of IT myself.
Yeah, well, this has made the news because it's actually associated with the Zoom virtual conferencing software right now. It's called Zoom bombing. And there's actually, the media has actually messed this up a little bit. There's actually three, dare I say, flavors of this, of Zoom bombing. And it's not fair to Zoom in all likelihood because it's any virtual conferencing software that might have this problem. But Zoom is most widely used right now virtual conferencing software out there, so it just got linked to them. So the first one is Zoom. People can get on to Zoom, your Zoom conference calls, and listen in to very important dialogues that are happening that might be very strategic to your business. And the way to protect that is to constantly change the code that's associated with each meeting.
Yeah, I've seen a couple of folks not do that, and I inadvertently dropped into a meeting because it was saved in my browser. So it's kind of interesting.
That's right. So the onus is on the meeting organizer. They should be changing the code for every meeting. But for expediency, because we've all gone into meetings and for 20 people and you're waiting for 25% of them to get on because they're having technical trouble or they got the wrong code or they got the wrong link or they got the, and so you're killing 20 minutes or 10 minutes of a meeting because just getting the meeting started took too long. So instead, what we're doing is we're sharing these links and we're not changing them, but now I can get into somebody else's meeting if I happen to have an old link. That's pretty dangerous.
It is. It was pretty. I felt embarrassed because I did that literally yesterday. I won't say who, but I jumped in and they're having a meeting and I'm like, hi, bye.
Now it gets one step worse than that. Now we have the one where somebody can get on, and if you're amongst a very large group, you're not even recognized. Nobody's even paying attention. So if it's a strategic meeting, you're now getting company secrets.
Wow.
Right? So you don't want to do that. But now it's gotten one step worse. So now those links are being distributed throughout the dark web, and hackers and or pedophiles are getting on, especially on classrooms with kids, and they're flashing pornography.
Oh, my gosh. Wow.
So that's the next version of Zoom bombing, is they got the links, they get on, and as soon as everybody's there, they grab hold of the meeting, and now, voila, they can start showing pornographic photos, and, you know, to young kids. And no parent wants to learn that that happened in such and such a school.
Sure.
So, again, the onus is still on the meeting organizers to keep those logins very private, or and change them.
Now, that makes total sense.
That's number two. Number three is Zoom. Now that's for all virtual conference software. The third one is only right now associated with Zoom, and that's that Zoom has a flaw where there's a bug in their software that I can go through your Zoom account and I can actually grab hold of your complete computer and turn on the camera and microphone and listen into your entire conversation in the house.
Wow.
While you're not even using your computer.
Oh, my.
So the way you protect yourself from that is when you're not using your computer, a very simple hack, take a post-it.